Ready to go live? You ready?
Yes.
And start. Wasn't that a hilarious joke I just told you that nobody heard?
Yes, I'm so glad that no one will ever hear it, because it's totally kept from the live broadcast for forever.
Do we have the... Are you going to do a tweet that we're live?
Or does matter? I'll do it.
Yeah, you do that.
You explain your hilarious joke to the audience.
So it says to the bartender, got any three-legged pigs back there?
What?
What?
Huh?
Have you completely forgotten all of the back to work inside jokes already?
Yes.
Pig like that you don't eat all at once?
Yes.
How do you not remember that one? All of the stupid... Oh, I see we have Flaccid Waffle in the chat room. I wonder who that could be.
I know exactly who it is. I don't need to...
I don't know how I didn't notice that that the name was registered before the show came out. I'm glad that you noticed that, but yeah. I certainly didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just observant like that because my powers of observation.
I didn't send the last picture. I did take one, but I thought it would be a little excessive for my personal brand. I did finish the last two of the 72 waffles, so I am now currently waffle-less.
Okay.
I don't know how to explain this
to you, but they have these grocery stores everywhere. and
let's not say everywhere, because they are a little few and far between from my neck of the woods.
Okay. I forget. How far away is it to go to a grocery store from your house?
The nearest grocery store is 3 miles away.
How many minutes is that driving distance?
For a normal human being, it would be like 5.
Okay. You have a grocery store that's 5 minutes from your house.
Mm-hmm.
And that's far.
Compared to like things being outside my door? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to establish, you know, that at 5 minutes is an unreasonable distance for you to get frozen, ready-made, just stick them in a toaster waffles. But yeah.
So it's very complicated structure of roads around here. I can't get into it.
Okay.
I couldn't get out of my driveway for a little bit yesterday. There was a police car blocking my driveway.
Why?
Something occurred with my neighbor, and I guess they showed up in a hurry, so they just parked blocking my driveway. That was nice.
Oh, okay.
It's not worth getting into. We've got the nice old man who lived next door died late last year, and there's been some somewhat peculiar lady renting the place for the past like 6 months.
Okay. Is this John Roderick's neighbors?
You know, she does not, I shouldn't say any of this. She doesn't live in a van, but you can tell she's not altogether there. Sometimes
I already don't know if I want you to divulge all of these personal information.
No, I was just going to say, sometimes I'll come home from wherever I was, and I will see a parked in the driveway or either in the road in front of her house, Suburban, her car, on with the driver door open, and she is nowhere to be seen. For like 5 minutes, she'll just be, you know, kind of like in the house with her car door open, parked, running in the middle of the road, which is very peculiar to me.
Okay.
That, and she has music and floodlights playing in her backyard 20 out of the 24 hours of the day, 7 days a week.
How do floodlights play?
Brightly.
Okay. Just dances off the surface of the rippling lake in the back or something. I don't know.
There's a pool, mm-hmm. and some furniture. Anyway, how's your week going?
I'm back on 10-hour days. So,
oh, that's fun.
That's kind of taken some of the pep out of my step, as it were.
That must mean you're about to deliver a project in 2 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, time flies. But there's that, and very shortly I'll be traveling out of town. So it's the crushing realization that I need to stockpile and edit and change and do stuff for two podcasts, and it was just like, oh, my hobby's so fun. And it's all that good stuff. Yeah,
Who needs to sleep?
No, sleep is overrated. Actually, If it were possible to skip sleep and not, like, you know, lose your mind or something, I would totally do that.
Yeah, I probably would too. I mean, I enjoy sleep, like, maybe on the weekends, but I probably wouldn't sleep during the week.
Yeah, Scott Squires and company were passing around a little business research article about the number of hours you work per week or something, and it's like, any more than 50 and you increase your risk of stroke. And I was just like, oh, LOL.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah, that's fun. Yeah. I'm more than familiar with working 16 hours a day for a couple of weeks on end to finish projects. That's always the best, right? Crunch time.
Yeah. Crunch time. Well, crunch time. Yeah, you gotta take the time and then you crunch it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or sometimes you just, like, you literally work until the project is done and you don't go home.
Yeah. Or you work really hard to get ahead on something and then you
so
just
you're
keep
never ahead.
Yeah, you never get ahead and you just keep working. Anytime anyone ever says to me that they're going to put in the hours now so that they don't have to work as hard later, I call BS on that, because that has never happened. It always turns into just more opportunity to do more later on. It's mm-hmm. not like, oh, we maxed out on all of our hours. No more hour spending here. It's not from, like, a set number of hours for a task. You're not moving rocks from one side of the building to the other. you're doing just artistic notes all the time. So then it's just like you just open yourself up to do them longer. Yeah. Anyway,
but other than that, you're having a great time.
Yeah, just I'm just a ray of sunshine. and you know. We had our lovely week last week, where the two of you and I, we met for the first time ever. I spit out some Listerine into a bush, and then I turned, and then you were there, and
I
said,
"Hi."
I
don't know why you felt the need to put that in the blog post.
I don't know, but I was just like, "This is such an embarrassing anecdote. I probably should mention it."
It was not that bad.
Yeah, but it was. I mean, you know, first impressions. It's always good. Yeah,
we've literally been talking to each other once a week for a year or so, and it's not really first impression, but it's fine.
Well, I think, like, the second thing you said to me was, "Wow, you're tall," and you were kind of upset about that a little bit.
I was not upset. I just mm-hmm. was not prepared for the tallness. I know you warned me ahead of time, but I wasn't prepared.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then we had our lovely day at SIGGRAPH, and we talked about that in the last episode, where we partially recorded it correctly. And
by the way, I did just in the nick of time before we started rolling remember to switch the setting on my mic.
Oh, good.
I'm like, I got a little bit of fan noise coming out of my laptop. That's weird. It's picking it up, and right, it's picking up on the other side. And turn the gain down now.
Well, that's important.
See, I'm smart. I remember things.
Yes.
I wish my keyboard maestro macro would adjust my gain on my microphone when I hit the keyboard button.
I don't think that's how knobs work on physical devices in your house.
It is unfortunate I can't automate the knobs.
So
good week?
Yeah. Wait, no. We've been over this. You don't have waffles, and I have too much work. So
the meetup was good. The meetup was fun at SIGGRAPH.
Mm-hmm. And we met Rye and TM and Boy Named Boom and Duncan. And we had a couple little beverages there in the dark members only bar.
I'm now a member of a bar that I will probably never return to. That's nice.
I know. Well, you know, given the number, given our turnout, we could have gotten away with the guest qualification of just having one membership so that I could have been the sole member. But I'm glad that you have something to hold on to remember us by. By something to hold on to, I mean you have no physical item in your possession. You're just going to get emails about special offers to go down for the rum tastings.
Did we even give them any personal information other than the $20 and maybe a driver's license or something?
Email.
Did we? I don't remember that.
Yes. You said
yeah. I have to bleep that now. Thank you.
Wait, why do you have to bleep that? It's on your website, Dan.
It is not on my website.
Oh, no. No one will guess your email.
That's not even my domain name anymore.
Okay.
You're the worst.
Okay. Sorry.
Thank God nobody listens to the show live.
Yeah. Mailbagging.
At least I'll get random spam emails from people that aren't Kyle.
Okay. Well, I mean, that happens anyways, regardless.
I think so. I have him just forwarded to spam, though.
Oh, that's sad. After all the effort he went through to make that horrible bot that
which he's
things.
Apparently going to kill because his Heroku bills are too high.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's his own fault, really. I mean, he should just have to pay it forever. Because that's the only thing that makes sense.
I just hope he gives me the login so I can log in and occasionally post ridiculous nonsense from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I ask. Okay. If you want to kill my bot, you can kill my bot, but give me the login.
Okay, well, but that takes away some of the magic of it if I know that it's just you.
Well, you won't know. Just what you'll have to forget, and then the three people in the chat will have to forget too. But then it'll all be everyone will keep going, thinking that it's some stupid Perl script or whatever.
I'm not really sure this is how memory works.
I've seen Men in Black.
Okay. Yes. Which is a different 1990s science fiction movie.
Here comes the segue.
I don't know what you're talking about. There was no segue. I was just mentioning things.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
So science fiction in the 90s, was that a thing that happened like a lot? Did they do a lot of sci-fi movies in the 90s?
Yes, because they could. And they did them in the 80s and stuff too.
Mm.
It happened. It was a thing. And, you know, sometimes they involved starships sometimes they involved troopers.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Did they ever combine those two elements?
Yeah, there was a little thing called Starship Troopers. So there was that in 1997.
How'd that turn out?
Not well.
Holy crap. $100 million budget. I just scrolled down to the box office portion of the IMDb page.
Yeah.
$100 million estimated budget, opening weekend 22.
No, but, you know, over its lifetime, it made it back. Because that was back in the 90s when movies would be in the movie theaters for longer durations of time and they would earn money over time. It was a crazy concept. as opposed to nowadays, where if you don't make basically the entire budget of your movie on your opening weekend, then you're just doomed. So, the total box office for them was $121 million, so it was profitable. Enough to launch several horrible sequels that have been critically panned by everyone, even the people that liked the first movie. So
I think I was only aware of the third one, which was odd. Like, I think I was walking through like a Blockbuster back when Blockbuster was still a thing, and I saw the third one. It's like, where did the second one go?
Yeah, well, the third one, they talked that one up a lot because they were like, oh, yeah, it's a real return to form because we brought back, you know, people. And it was like, I don't know about that. So
this is the only one that Verhoeven did, right?
Yes, this is the only one that Verhoeven did.
Yeah, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, Verhoeven is an essential ingredient to this film. If you are unfamiliar with RoboCop and with Total Recall, then you're totally going to miss a lot of the Verhoeven-ness that has been repeated again in this film.
Well, you're going to see it, and you're just going to be thoroughly confused.
Yes. Well, Verhoeven has a certain style, especially when it comes to his future action movies, which turns out he's done a couple. They've all been noteworthy, I would say. Regardless of your opinion of them, they've been noteworthy. So much so that people have gone back and tried to make remakes of two of them that I just listed. No one's made a remake of Starship Troopers yet, but I bet somebody's going to pull the trigger on that eventually.
Did you realize there was a TV show, too? I had no idea.
Yeah, The Roughnecks.
Starship Troopers Chronicles, 99 and 2000, 39 episodes.
Yeah.
Wow. I kind of want to see that.
No. Go look at a preview after this, and you really
Verhoeven won't. Produced it. That's what I'm saying. Like, it has to be.
Producing something doesn't necessarily mean anything. There's a lot of things that Steven Spielberg put his name on as producer in the 90s that you don't really want to go back and watch.
Maybe I do. You don't know me.
Okay, fine. Go ahead and do it, Dan. I warned you. I warned you, Dan. Yeah. And there are a lot of people from Verhoeven's previous projects that pop up and make appearances here, including creature effects designer Phil Tippett, who did a lot of the stop motion-y and go motion-y stuff from previous endeavors. But, you know, of course, they're not actually doing that here because this was when computers were around. So he's overseeing all the computer stuff.
There's some practical stuff in here, mostly just for extreme close-ups.
No, but that's puppets. That's not.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, there's no stop motion in this film.
No.
And Michael Ironside, who was in Total Recall and was briefly considered for the role of Murphy in RoboCop, is also in here. And composer Basil Poudouris from RoboCop. So if it sounds a little RoboCop-y when you're listening to the soundtrack, it's because, well, it was the same guy.
His name is Basil?
Yeah, or Basil.
Well, Basil sounds like a name. Basil is
a herb.
It's a herb.
It's a herb.
It's a vegetable almost.
Yeah. Yeah. What if it was VeggieTales, but it was just with the arachnids?
Are they like some form of squash because they're yellow and black? Like, what are they made out of?
Well, that one tank one explodes into like butternut squash soup. So
and the other one explodes into like carrot juice or something.
Well, no, the arachnids, when you shoot them, those ones explode into like split pea soup. They're like a green. But
the big beetle thing is
that's the orange one. That's the tank.
Yeah,
bug.
The orange one.
Yeah, and then the. Brain bug, they don't explode it, so we just got to guess what color it is when it explodes.
It spits out some gross looking mucus.
Yeah, but mucus isn't really like a color. It's just sort of like.
I'm pretty sure when you say mucus, people can envision the color.
No, but the mucus in this movie is just like that slime that they put on everything in the 80s. It's just clear.
Oh man, that was probably a good bit industry for a while. The slime
industry.
The slime industry of the 80s was probably really, really popular.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just buckets of the stuff. And it'd be like, hey, get the slime guy in here. Everything's looking a little too dry.
Slime everything down for a minute.
Uh-huh. Yeah, just freshen the place up. we need some more slime on the proboscis.
I think they had people who specialized in different, like, viscous types of slime or different colors of slime.
I don't think so. But, you know.
You don't think the industry was large enough to have specialties? It was just, you know, bring in the slime guy?
I mean, you just say we need slime, and then they bring in that clear stuff. I think there was, like, a little neon green slime, like in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles era. But I don't think that really stuck around very long. It was you know, the style of the time.
I mean, there was Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters was a big one. They probably used a large portion of the slime and
That they had a special pink goo, but I wouldn't really call that slime so much for the river of slime because it had a different texture.
Sure, but you know they slimed up Venkman pretty good when Slimer actually hit him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true. Yeah. Slime. Mm-hmm.
You think they just like back a truck up with like a little hose and then just spray stuff down, and you think it's like delicately applied like makeup?
I think that it depends on the distance to camera. You want to make sure that your actors up close receive a lot of attention. So I have to imagine there was just like a single hair horsehair brush that they would apply the slime with on our close up actors.
Or do they do it like Sponge Sugar, where they get like a brush and they kind of like whip it in the air so it kind of like stretches out?
I really don't think it holds together that well.
No.
Judging by the fact that it gets everywhere, I would assume that it is not as internally consistent in structure. Remember how we were talking about? Remember how we were talking about a movie at one point?
Well, this is integral to the plot. The various colors of slime that come out of the bugs.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those situations where we provided you with more information. Like, if you were theoretically on the news site interweb thing, and then it says, would you like to know more?
Don't do that.
And then your mouse cursor glides across the screen and either clicks on the menu up at the top for one of the five options, or clicks on the more in the text, you know?
There are a few things about this movie that are... outdated or anachronistic or whatever you want to say, but like, you know, The newsreel stuff is actually an interesting way to kind of punctuate the beginning and end, and like that awkward transition in the middle of the movie to take you into the, well, I guess, second act. But I kind of liked the way they did that.
Yeah, well, he's no stranger to these sorts of fake media bits. You know, from RoboCop, he starts off with a fake media bit of what was it, Lisa Gibbons and the other guy, and they talk about stuff, and there are commercials they cut away to every now and then, and they do exactly the same thing here. Structurally, it's the same because we start off with a bit of exposition provided from our narrator person-y disembodied voice thing. And we discuss asteroids and Klandathu, which is clear on the other side of the universe. if you look at that little map thing, it's just like, here's Earth, here's Klandathu. And that doesn't really mean much, except like later on when you're trying to figure out the logistics of this, and it's like, oh, the bugs knocked an asteroid out of orbit towards Earth using only bug plasma. And it was like, so... that was a really, like, I don't know, a long... term plan in order to do that. I mean, they must have been really angry.
Yeah, I mean, we should get this out of the way right now. Like, the time scale of this movie makes zero sense. Like, none of it.
Yeah, are you saying that he shouldn't start off as somebody enrolling in the military at the beginning of the movie, and then he's a lieutenant at the end, but everybody who is with him is privates?
I love the fact that at the end of the movie, he's a lieutenant. He does the looking around going... what's up with all these kids? It's like, you've been at war for like 4 days. What is the matter with you?
Yeah, yeah. And worst of all, he's just quoting his former mentor, his teacher, and his boss up until his untimely demise, and just reciting his lines. And it's like, okay, so definitely not mentally stable. I don't know how
there is something about it. Like, you gotta maintain the military tradition. It's kind of like a Dread Pirate Roberts thing. Like, you pass it on down to the next guy who just picks up the role and keeps moving, and then all of the people who serve under him just don't know any different.
Yeah, but what's going to happen if he dies, and then somebody who doesn't have an R in their name is put in charge of the Roughnecks?
That'll kind of mess up the alliteration a little bit. They'll have to promote somebody who has an R.
Yeah, I mean, would they change the name of it? Because if Private Ace Levy makes his way up the chain... then
that's not gonna happen.
Yeah, I mean, you're not gonna call it Ace's Roughnecks. I mean, this doesn't have the same punch. You're not gonna call it Levy's Roughnecks.
Well, yeah. It would. Yeah, I was gonna say, you gotta go with the last name, because it's I guess you've got two options. You've got first name or last name if they both start with an R.
Yes, and I just mentioned both of them and that they don't have R's.
There are additional people that he could potentially promote.
Well, but he could just change his name. He could, instead of Ace, he could be Race. Yeah. Like Race Bannon from Johnny Quest.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's like the Dread Pirate Rico or whatever, man. Like, whoever just comes up next, they just assume the name of Rico.
But he didn't assume his teacher's name.
Well, you know, he's starting the tradition.
Then it wasn't really a tradition, because he picked it up from Rajik.
Yeah, but that name's too long and hard to say.
Okay. Okay, Dan. All right. Well, I'm glad we've addressed so far slime and the naming of war units in made-up federal military land.
This is all hypothetical anyway, because the only way anyone gets promoted in this movie is because everyone else around them dies.
Very quickly.
You're the last person standing, and you've been in the army for 4 hours. You're suddenly a sergeant, and then a corporal or a colonel or whatever he goes up to next, and then he's a lieutenant.
Well, you know, because I'm so familiar with Star Trek, I know that the military has systems in place for acting promotions, so that an acting captain, an acting lieutenant, because you need to fill these positions in order for your unit to function while it's out. However, they go back to the Ticonderoga, and you think they'd be like, okay, yeah, let's actually think about what just happened here, and we'll do our own little thing about who gets put in charge. But that doesn't seem to happen. They're just like, nope, this guy who was responsible for somebody taking off his helmet and getting shot and killed, he should totally be in charge of the rest of these guys. No questions asked.
It's just like everyone who was above him died in all of the various platoons around the planet. They were all dead. There were no more lieutenants left.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing they ended the movie when they did. In 5 more minutes, somebody would have made a Sky Marshal. So,
well, the Sky Marshals are all safe down on Earth. And, you know, the other thing is, like, if the lieutenants above you aren't dying fast enough, you can just shoot them.
Yes.
Well, that's apparently a thing.
I feel really bad for Clancy Brown, because he starts off the movie training people. And then at the end of the movie, he gets to come back in for his cameo and say, "Ah, I'm a private now, sir." It's just like, oh, Clancy.
Well, he did what Jake Busey said he wanted to do. He just wanted to fight. Like, he didn't care what his rank was. He was supposed to fight, and he won it all.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, NPH knew who did it, so maybe he can give him some credit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, NPH. Interesting role for him. In this,
he's in charge of the entire army, and he's 12 years old.
Mm-hmm. And he has a squeaky little voice.
And his haircut is super tight and is not doing him any favors in terms of making him look old.
And that terrible, like, trench coat they gave him to wear to look like he's in military intelligence is not. Yeah. It's not.
Just looks like something they took out of World War II over on the eastern side.
I know when they say, like, dress for the job you want, not the job you have. Like, I just can't imagine.
He's dressing for JP from Grandma's Boy.
ill-advised. Very ill-advised.
But he's psychic, and he can predict, like, playing cards and stuff, and he can make ferrets attack his mom.
Yes, and he can tell that the giant, quivering, gelatinous sack that shrinks from his touch is afraid. So
it's a brain.
That. Yeah.
Although the backside of it kind of looks like a slug. I never really noticed that before. Like, as it's going away in the tunnel, it's kind of got, like, little slug antenna on its butt.
Well, it's an interesting design in general. One of the things that I found is really sticks out when you watch it nowadays, and it's available for free on Netflix. So if you're listening to this and you're like, wow, Dan and Joe make this sound so appealing, I'm going to go back and check it out, then go do that. But when you go back and you watch it now, you can actually see all the relief from the bump maps on him, the low resolution bump maps, which were high resolution for the time, but they're low.
I thought the visual effects in this movie looked pretty good, and we should get it out of the way ahead of time, like at the beginning of this podcast, now that we're however many minutes in. I really like this movie. I do. I haven't seen it in a while, but it's fun in its stupidity. Like, it is dumb, but it is, like, super well done and plays to its strengths, and it is enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, no, I'm not bashing the movie. I'm just, this is what I do when I watch things. So,
but the regular bugs, the drone bugs, the arachnids, whatever you want to call them.
No, they look good, and I wasn't finished totally with the brain bug thing yet.
Go back to your bump maps.
Yes, well, not just that, but also shadow maps, because you can actually see on the sides of him, there's a stair-steppy pattern that flickers, and that's from the low-resolution shadow maps that they had from the raking lights on the side. And so you can go back and watch that little Easter egg when they're in the cavern, right when it turns around to go ahead and back its way out of there. You get a couple quick flashes of that. So, you know, it's just the sort of thing that I notice when I watch a film.
That scene in particular had some less-than-great lighting and compositing. Like, there were a few instances, like when the brain bug's first coming in, those little whatever beetle things that he's riding on, there are a couple shots where they just straight up look like they're hovering because the shadows just don't really comply.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, like, the rest of the movie actually holds up really, really well, especially for 1997.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not as detailed as it would be nowadays, but, you know, for the time, it was great, and I still think it's no less Starfighter in terms of the shading quality or anything like that being bad. I just wanted to point that one little thing out. And I can't remember what it was. I read it somewhere that you know that when they're in that base and they're looking out and there's just like swarms of the arachnids all over the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I think I read somewhere that basically they would come in for the day, check out how the frame was doing, see if it had rendered correctly, hit the button to render another frame, and then go home, because it took so long to render those. But I could be misremembering that, so don't.
I believe that.
Yeah, it was also, you know, this is pre-Massive, this is pre, you know, Lord of the Rings, this is no particle sims for this. Like, all of those are animated. Every single little bug you see there moving around. So there's a lot of care that went into this. and Tippett oversaw it.
Yeah, the animation of the bugs too. I mean, they're kind of robotic in the way they move, but their body really plays into the way they move, and it kind of helps sell the realism too. I really like the bugs in this movie. They're weird, but they're like menacing, and they're definitely frightening.
Well, they did it in a really smart way, because there isn't a lot of their surface geometry that needs to deform. So their legs and stuff are all like pointy little sticks, and their big mouth claw thing is just basically like a giant claw on the top. That doesn't need to deform either. So they're just like the little fleshy bits in between that actually need to bend. And that really makes it a lot easier, because if they were like cave trolls walking in, and then you'd be like, okay, well, they need to squash and stretch and move, and the, you know, like arm flab needs to jiggle or whatever. And like when they step, you'd expect to see footprints. But you know, if they just have these little tiny, very specific stick legs that just like prick the ground and move on, then you don't need to see like, you know, footprint after footprint after footprint.
although every instance of their spiky foot hitting the dirt created like a little poof of dirt that came up in the air.
Yeah, well, stuff. And the and this is also back when you'd have to work with a practical puppet on set and then swap back and forth between them. And that happens very quickly in the opening scene, where there's an arachnid, and it's like, oh no, it's the CG arachnid. And it's like, oh no, it's the puppet waving around somebody. Oh no, he cut the person in half. And it's just like, they move the camera every time they need to swap between one of them. Which is a nice trick. I like it. And it plays. Like, if you were watching this as a casual audience member, you're not really paying attention to the swapping that they're doing on off camera, when they're going back and forth between these different things.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yes, I can tell when they switch between the practical and the CG one, but like, not just because I'm like pro CG man, but I think the practical ones in this movie do not look as good as the CG ones. Is that weird? Like, is that something I should be saying out loud?
Quietly. The arachnids kind of look dusty in real life, because they were dusty, but the CG ones look a little cleaner.
I think maybe it's like the shiny material, because you know, the texture and the color of them in CG worked for what they were, and then they kind of like built off of that. I mean, the practical ones had to mirror that, but just whatever they were built out of, yeah, I guess it was the shine combined with the way they get dusty. They did not. I was not super sold on them.
Yeah, well, the practical ones also couldn't move as fast.
You can tell they're just sort of like articulating around one joint or something.
Yeah, like basically most of the time when you saw the practical part, you would just be seeing the giant claw head thing, and it would just be like waving around in frame with something stuck in between its mouth or whatever. Or you'd see one of the arms like stick a little claw thing or something through someone's leg. And that was not, it didn't need the level of articulation that... It didn't articulate as much as like the CG ones did. So you'd cut back and forth between these different things where they'd like make the swap off camera.
But I think their speed too was part of the reason they would seem so menacing and kind of like a good bad guy.
Yes, I agree. And the flying ones, which I don't know the name of those things, but the flying
you mean the ones that don't show up until like the third act.
Yeah, when it's just like, oh yeah, we have an air force or something. The flying ones.
Do you think they invented those because they were learning the whole time? It's like we gotta get an air force in here to help us combat these ships and stuff. We do a lot better if we had some flying bugs. Go genetically modify some bugs and give them wings.
I was never clear on the process there, because I haven't read the book, even though I know the movie is definitely not based on the book from every account that I've been told. Like the diverges just a little bit. Like every Verhoeven project diverges from whatever source material it came from. And those bugs, when they show up, those ones I don't think are as convincing as the arachnids or the tank bug. They are a little too saturated. And
they're very blue.
Well, green. They got the all the green bright bits that stick out.
They were going for kind of one of those fluorescent looking bugs.
Oh, iridescent.
That too.
Yeah, that too. Two different things.
Locusty wings too.
Yeah. Well, they gotta watch your head with those things, because they'll slice it right off. But
yeah, they're apparently very sharp.
Yeah, I thought those were animated well, but again, I don't think they worked as well as the arachnids on the ground in terms of, like, nowadays when you go back and look at it, I don't think those ones in particular, look-wise, are holding up as well.
Yeah, they're quite large.
Mm-hmm. Yep, unwieldy. So...
We haven't even begun talking about the movie.
Not really. That'd probably be a good idea. We've got the newsreel that sets us up with the invasion on Klandathu, and the news reporter guy talking directly into camera. And it is clear that he's on a battlefield that he probably should not be on, because it's not...
He's very stupid.
Yes. It's an ugly planet. A bug planet. Oh, good description. And so this... magnificent human being is blabbering on for a little bit, and then the arachnid breaks in, and like we said, you cut back and forth between the CG and the practical. They duke it out, and there's some death and cameras and stuff, and then it's like, oh no, what happened? 1 year later, and then I'm sorry, 1 year earlier. Later would be different. So
literally everyone would be dead.
Yes, yes. Oh, except for Rico, who's now in charge of the human race.
The last man alive, and suddenly it's a Twilight Zone episode.
All the bugs in the world. So the
he plops down on the steps outside of like a bug library.
This doesn't make any sense.
Suddenly there was time, and then he's surrounded and he's eaten.
Okay.
Some weird fan fiction. Doesn't make any sense.
Yes, very strange.
If only he was wearing glasses.
Yes, that would really solve things.
That would make this work.
Oh, dear. So the beginning of the movie, we get the 1 year earlier. Earlier is very important here. And then we arrive in sunny Buenos Aires, although for all intents and purposes, it is Los Angeles.
It's Los Angeles. How great is it that this episode comes right after last week's? Because, like, how much, like, all of the first act in this movie is shot at the Los Angeles Convention Center. Like, the whole first act.
Yeah, when I was watching it last night, I sent you that screenshot, and I was just like, look familiar? Because they were using the lobby area as the transport hub space, and then when they went in the, like, scene that was... like two scenes before that, they went to take their tests and stuff, and that was in another wing of the convention center, and they have some outside shots looking around, and it's just like, okay, we get it. The LA Convention Center looks pretty futuristic for the time.
Yeah, isn't even the like the giant glowy wall of grades to embarrass you, isn't that like one of the side areas of the convention center?
I think so. It seems like they were like, okay, we have a bunch of extras, so we need to shoot them all in the same place. Let's dress it a couple different ways.
Oh, and the prom party or whatever it was, that was like in the parking lot of the convention center.
Was it? I thought that was...
I'm pretty sure it's like the exact same area as the math thing, but just like pointed a different direction.
Oh, but there's like a fountain thing. Did it used to have a fountain?
No, I think they probably put the fountain there, but other than that, like it's the same exterior of the building.
All right, fine. Anyway, point being, there's a lot of Los Angeles here. And like the parents who live in their crazy mansion, they are in the hills. And those are hills surrounding their house, and it is a mansion here in Los Angeles. And the way they talk and everything, like everything about this is LA. There's nothing about this that is Buenos Aires. That is for sure. And other than their names, Rico, Banez, and Flores?
Yeah.
And it was just like, okay, really convinced.
How could you forget? Naughty Banez again. She's crazy. The award for the worst actor in this movie goes to that guy. There's a lot of bad acting in this movie.
Oh, there's mountains of it.
But it plays into it. It works so well. You've got the bad acting and you've got the campiness, and then you've got just like the horrific gore and violence everywhere.
Yes. Well, that's one of the things that I really enjoy about this is sort of this juxtaposition of the absolutely ridiculous nonsense that is a Paul Verhoeven film with these moments of them trying to be very serious, but it's not working quite.
You like the juxtaposition of like the big goofy dauber looking guy like struggling with his helmet and then like on camera being shot in the face.
Well, I wouldn't say I like that, Dan.
No, just the juxtaposition of those two things. I just want to get you on the record saying that's what you're a fan of.
I'm literally saying that wasn't what I was trying to say. I mean, like the media moments and, you know, his not subtle satire of future things. That stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
Not the murder. I'm really.
Well, it's more manslaughter. It was unintentional.
Okay. Well,
it was not premeditated.
Okay. Well, you're not getting me on record saying anything like that. So, moving on.
Come on, I need some out of context audio clips of you.
No thanks. And so they are in a class, and it's about what it means to be a citizen, and it is not good. It is not a good class. I don't know why they're learning this at this stage in their lives, but, you know, presumably it's just because the audience needs to know it. They're blathering on about, you know, the significance of serving in the military in order to say that you're in violent defense of your nation or whatever. Oh, it's just nonsense.
Yeah, what class is this? I think it's called War Movie Act 1 101.
yes. And the students are in a very well-funded school that has an iPad program, and they all have these weird little pressure-sensitive quasi-CRT laptop-y things. They're weird. And they all have drawing programs that look like MS Paint, but they can animate in them with, like, the touch of a button. No in-between frames needed. Just sort of, like, draw something and it'll happen. So it's just pretty silly when you go back and watch it now. It's just like, I think by the time this movie comes out, these notions will seem rather quaint.
you think?
Yeah. And the, like he doodles the two of them kissing and sends it to her in his note in class. And then, you know, she sees it and she changes it. And then she, you know, airdrops it back to him and it, you know, blows up the bubble in his face. And it's just like,
it can't be airdrop.
Womp.
It actually worked on the first try.
Yeah. Oh God. Well, that's because there's wires running underneath the desk connecting all the pads. But
I love that they're actually like glass screens.
Yeah. Well, there was nothing really like super mobile about them. They make a show of like pushing it across the desk at one point. It's just like, okay, good job, guys. And Michael Ironside blathers on about this stuff for a while, and they have their what was it, the biology class was next.
Oh, yeah, like dissect a bug, because I guess even in spite of the fact that the bug planet is on the other side of the universe, they have some sample dead bugs for everyone to dissect.
Yeah, and it wasn't clear to me whether or not these bugs are directly related to the bug empire or if these are just like random super bugs that they found on some other planet they colonized. Because
the thing I had a problem with in this scene is it like a speed biology class? Like, why are they cutting them up so quickly? What's the hurry?
No clue. It was like some sort of like dissect as fast as possible and collect all of the entrails that you can. Amazing Race kind of event. I have no idea what was
like
happening.
It's like one of those shows where you gotta like search through the entrails of the bug and find like a little card that tells you what your next clue is.
Yeah, it was not. I didn't understand it. And then here's your slime again. Covering literally everything. And then we got some nice practical effects from Denise having to upchuck.
I think you're thinking of oatmeal.
I think you're thinking of overnight oats. Chia pudding, Dan.
It looked very similar to that congealed nonsense that you keep in your fridge.
No, that was cloudy. This is totally clear. It's like, it's mucilaginous.
I'm glad we all learned a new word today. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. And the, you know, strange biology teacher has her little speech about like how smart bugs are and arachnids. And then she's like turning on the little holo projector. And it's like, okie dokie.
Was she blind or were the dark glasses just an affectation?
I believe she was supposed to be blind, going by the stick that she was walking around with, Dan.
Oh, I didn't see the stick.
Yeah.
But she just dissects by feel, I guess, huh?
Yeah, well, I get the impression that nearly every adult except for Rico's parents has been horribly maimed by serving in the military.
In the military.
Yeah. Which is interesting. Yay, well, do citizenship.
Do you have to be a citizen to be a teacher? Is that what the thing was?
I have no clue. It seems like a very strange requirement. But yes, good for her.
I thought Michael Ironside was just doing that to kill some time between wars or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Yeah, I mean, well, you know, he's more at home on the battlefield for a variety of reasons. He had a hard time walking away from it again.
That was terrible. How come he couldn't wear his metal robot hand thing in the classroom?
I'm assuming he didn't have it, and they gave it to him.
It's government issued only?
Yeah. I mean, those things cost a lot of money, Dan. It's a robot hand.
Well, he's still, like, potentially in the military. He, like, rolls up as a lieutenant, so you think they'd let him, like, hang on to it for a little while.
But he's not, like, active service. No, he's active service, so he gets a little arm thingy.
We don't know that he's not active service. The Army's just not doing anything.
Okay, well, I don't know, Dan. I don't know how to explain this to you. It's just, that was the way it happened in the film. Just happened.
You could have just say, like, he took it off because, you know, he needed to get some air on his arm or something. I don't know.
Okay, Dan. Okay. And
I want a robot hand.
Would it be your Apple Watch hand or your other hand?
Let's go with the Apple Watch hand. We can integrate the watch at the top of the robot hand.
Okay, well, what if they come up with a new Apple Watch? Are you going to upgrade your whole hand?
I wouldn't need to. It'd be modular.
Just the watch part would pop out?
Yeah. So instead of like where the bands slide in and out, like the watch would click into the robot hand.
Yeah, but that's more of a third-party accessory. I don't know if I'd trust an Apple third-party accessory like that.
Well, you know, they've released like the watch SDK, so there's measurements of that. It's pretty precise these days, I think.
Yeah, I know, but do you really want to have your robot hand made by Belkin?
Oh my God, no. I don't want anything that I have to rely on in a wartime environment made by Belkin.
Yes. This is an interesting digression. Or iGriffin or whatever. Anyway.
all of the transmitters were built by iGriffin. That's why the aliens were able to jack into the signal and send that fake distress signal and trick everyone to coming down.
No, that's because they slurped the guy's brains to make him call the thing.
No, I think it was because they were all just broadcasting on 88.1 FM. there was crosstalk.
There is crosstalk right now. that is what is happening. So, movies. So this film, this thing, they have their thing with the test scores and whatever, and the big projector to go find your big rear screen projector to go find your test scores, and you know, she's doing well and he not so much, and then Neil Patrick Harris is a jerk and embarrasses him in front of everybody, and you know, NPH and Casper Van Dien go back to his place, and they play a little card matching game, which NPH says, you know, statistically you should have guessed right at least a little once at this point. And Casper Van Dien's like, oh, well, you know, I'm not good at anything, whatever. can I digress for a moment and say that I don't really particularly care for Casper Van Dien?
No, I'm with you. He's perfect for this role and literally only this role.
Yes, well, guess what's gone on in his illustrious career after this movie?
Not a ton of things, I'm gonna imagine.
Well, not only not a ton of things, but he came back was in the another Starship Troopers.
Well, you know, good for him.
I don't know if that's really the word I would use, but he makes it up to Colonel in that one. Colonel Johnny Rico in Starship Troopers 3:Marauder.
All right. Sure.
That was that was in 2008.
So he's good for that.
He's also played most recently Rumpelstiltskin.
Was he actually Rumpelstiltskin, like the character?
That is listed as the role that he played.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
So we are not the first people then to realize that he has the face of a marionette.
And as I might have mentioned before, the acting range
of marionette. Furrowed eyebrows and then a voice that doesn't really match what his face is doing.
He's got resting douche face.
And his voice gets higher when he gets angrier, too. I think that's funny.
Yeah. He makes some odd choices as an actor in this. I mean, I kind of buy him being an emotionally immature human being, but that's not really, like, hard.
I mean, cut him some slack. He literally just got out of high school, like, 3 days ago, and now he's a lieutenant. Like,
Well, yes, all these 30-year-olds just got out of high school.
Yeah, I was looking that up to see how old some of these people were. NPH was like 24. I think he was one of the younger ones, except like Amy Smart, who has like 5 seconds in this movie. I think she was 21 or something in it.
Yeah, and what was that? The guy who played Xander, Patrick Muldoon.
Yeah, I don't. How old was he? I didn't look him up.
Let's see. He was born in 1968, and he's 46 now. So what would that be in 1997?
29.
Yep.
So they were all pretty much 29.
Yep. Like I said, 30-year-old high schoolers.
Well, it is Los Angeles in the future.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's why the classes are so sophisticated, because they've all been held back for so many years.
Standardized testing really takes the curriculum down over the next couple decades. What year does this movie take place? I don't even remember.
Oh.
It was like 2050 or something.
Yeah, it's in the opening crawl, but I also don't remember.
Mm.
It's not really a crawl.
Anyway,
it's not important.
It's
because it's not like we're going to... This is not like Back to the Future where everyone's going to put it down on a calendar and be like, oh, there aren't any hoverboards yet.
This is the year that the bugs threw an asteroid at the planet Earth.
Buenos Aires is still there. Guess that didn't happen, huh, guys?
Oh, terrible predictions. And then, like, even in the opening there, like, they show an asteroid, like, flying at the Earth, and then a spaceship blows it up. It's like, hey, guys, where were you later in the movie when the asteroid actually hits the planet?
I think you're referring to plot holes. Which we will find plenty of as the film progresses. They have their weird bouncy football game.
Football game.
Their indoor stadium bouncy football game with the metal football.
It's like they have a shiny chrome football. They're all wearing long sleeve, like, matching uniforms.
And they have corporate sponsors. So there's an AT&T backlit little banner thing by the side of the stadium.
AT&T sponsored the video messages too.
Yes, because in the future, AT&T will literally own everything. So they're that's not that far from the truth, really. They just merged with DirecTV, so slowly take over our world and choke us to death.
And they're all wearing hockey helmets with their football gear, which is nice.
Yes. Well, their football gear is also very colorful and form-fitting, with big, like, shoulder pads. So it's very strange outfit.
Yeah, it's a very terrible futuristic form of arena football, where the stands are far too close, where people can just not get knocked into the stands on any given play and then hit on your girlfriend accidentally.
Yeah, well, that's half the fun when you, like, bounce into the air and, like, triple flip over somebody.
Yeah, I'm sure that's not against the rules at all to just go, like, sit down on the barricade and start, like, talking up some random girl.
So strange. And what a coincidence with Xander, who will never show up again.
He's not a bad guy from the first time we see him.
Oh, God. You get introduced to him and you're just like, you're awful. You're disgusting. Like, everything about you, like, your smarmy attitude, the way you, like, hold yourself, like, he's just, like, exudes contempt. And Denise is all like, oh, he's just my friend. And it's just like, Denise, no.
Yeah, I like how even she's like, so, you're in the army. I'm going to do that, too. I'm going to be a pilot, too. And then Rico's getting angry. She's like, what are you being angry about? Like, that thing you just did. Like, You know what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's a...
and also Rico, I will say, unfortunately, that Rico is perhaps a little too sensitive here. And that he immediately leaps into the, I'm going to crush him and you know, pummel him to death and kill him forever kind of stance. And it's just like, okay, they're talking. So maybe if you kind of overreact, then it will be bad. So don't overreact.
Yeah, Rico has some emotional problems in this movie. He has Paul Verhoeven emotions, like in the same way that Verhoeven overdoes it with the violence and what have you. Rico is up there with the emotions. Like, he's super clingy and protective of Carmen, and then he's a giant asshole to Dizzy.
Yeah. Oh my god. And okay, we need to talk about Dina Meyer as Dizzy Flores.
Yes.
She's
the captain of the football, or the quarterback of the football team, first of all. So she's the one throwing the chrome football.
Yes. And she unfortunately drew the short straw, and is stuck with this longing for Rico.
She loves him and is trying to steal him at any instance, to the point where it's almost creepy. Like, she's hiding until they like take three steps away from each other, and then she grabs Rico, is like, hey, dance with me, let's make out, what are you doing after this? It's like, whoa, slow your roll a little bit there.
Yeah, well, see, I can understand that a little bit, that she's, you know, just feeling very strongly, and there aren't that many people, and this will be like the last time she sees him for a while, except for the part where she follows him into military service, specifically requests his unit, and then bunks up with him,
and then denies that that's what she did.
Yes, like that part, just like, okay, so we're gonna pretend that was normal.
But after that first instance where she's like all over him and he goes like, can't we just be friends, and like storms off, like, wouldn't you be like, yeah, this guy's kind of not worth my time?
Oh yeah, well, he treats her like absolute garbage, and
we have no idea what she sees in him. Maybe they just grew up together or something, but who knows. He is terrible and she is in love for some reason.
Yeah, she's Twitter pated. So dear, they have this whole thing with the argument with the parents. Like, oh, I'm going to military school. Oh, well, you're no son of mine.
It's not military school. It's like the actual military.
It's pretty ridiculous, that scene with his parents. The dad is just, ugh. This is just cringeworthy.
And as listener Rye pointed out, you know it's a serious scene because the dad walks over to the table and pours himself a glass of whiskey from a decanter.
Yes, and not just a decanter, but like a future decanter.
A future decanter, and he pours it into like those little tiny glasses, which I think those are the glasses that they normally use to like put hard-boiled eggs on. You know, those old ones? Like, he pours it into a glass version of that and hands one to his son.
Yeah. Well, I thought he was handing it to his wife. I didn't realize he handed it to his son.
No, he gives it to Rico, then cheers to him. He's like, you're terrible, you're ruining your life, but enjoy your prom. Here's some whiskey and a like sawed off champagne flute or something.
Yeah. Oh, it was also strange, as there were all those other decanters of various sizes and colors behind him, and I feel like the prop department was like, okay, Paul, which one of these do you want? And he's like, all of them.
his father is a very powerful man and a very powerful alcoholic. He needs various decanters for his various alcohols.
Oh, good. It was just weird. And the mom, you know, with her bangs is all like, oh, Johnny, oh. And
you look so handsome in your tuxedo. Don't go and die.
Yeah, dear. And they have the whole thing where after the prom, and he talks to Michael Ironside. He's like, I don't know what to do. And Michael Ironside's like, making your own choices is the only thing that people have in life. And he's like, wow.
Which is like the only thing in this movie that is remotely realistic. It is a great line.
It's fine, except for Rico's reaction is just like, oh, so deep. And he's just like, I'm gonna go join the military now.
Oh man, he's so right. I should think for myself. Like, that advice is so good. I'm gonna do exactly what he did.
Because he told me to think for myself, that's how I know that he's the one I should follow.
Exactly.
Oh dear.
That's not what he said, or how that's supposed to work.
No. And why are you taking advice from somebody who lost his arm in military service? Unless it's like a career goal of yours, especially if
that's not a deterrent. And then the guy at the counter there who lost his legs and his arm, that's not a deterrent at all. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, it made me what the man I am today. And this is not to make light of actual wounds and injuries in real combat. I mean, this movie, I think, is actually making light of actual wounds and injuries that actually occur.
Yeah, yeah. They're taking sort of like the seriousness of the wartime tragedy and just being like, "Yep, that's just what happens." The end.
Yeah, there's no consideration about any of the things that happen, and people are just like shot on the battlefield occasionally, sometimes rather than.
Well, part of it is like this like the future their healing methods. Like 5 seconds into meeting their drill instructor, he breaks what's his name's arm, and then he's just like, "Oh, medic, go put this little baggie of blue green liquid on your arm. You'll be fine by lunch."
Yeah, and then he does that. A horrible bruise
on the side of her neck, but like we're not super clear on what is and is not like a survivable thing in this movie, because clearly like amputation is very much a thing. They'll just give you like a robot hand or whatever. But then like when Rico gets stabbed in the leg there, they put him in a big tank of green liquid for
I think you're thinking
at least 3 days.
It's a Bacta tank.
Why does it have a name, and is that from Star Trek?
No, it's from Star Wars.
Oh, okay, sure.
It's what they put Luke in.
I'm gonna say I remember that.
Mm-hmm. You don't remember that from Empire Strikes Back?
Sure.
Oh my God, Dan, you're an embarrassment. you are gonna get so much email at that email address that you're gonna bleep out.
Oh my God. I'm not gonna dig this a little deeper.
So Dan, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
What happens at the beginning of Empire Strikes Back?
We're not talking about that movie right now.
No, it's just an aside.
We gotta stay focused here, Joe. We only have so much.
This is not the show to stay focused on. So, just like in general terms, could you sum up what happens at the beginning of Empire Strikes Back?
I think the Empire begins their plot to strike back. I'm relatively sure there's some crawling text on the screen, too.
Listeners, judge for yourself how terrible Dan is as a human being. And then tell him about it.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, anyway, back to tanks. Although I'm sure it's not actually Bacta because it's Starship Troopers universe and not the Star Wars universe. So, but
I wanted to ask you, though, like, why was it like 4 days to fix his leg? It looked like that thing was moving pretty quickly.
Well, you got to heal it up, but then you got to make sure it, like, works. You know, you gotta like exercise, physical therapy. I mean,
you gotta sew it up and then sous vide the wound shut or something.
Well, I mean, even if you like sprain your ankle or something, like it still takes a couple days to recover. That didn't actually involve like getting your legs stitched back together.
But then what's his name had his arm fixed by Breckenridge. His arm was almost like functional by lunch.
Okay, I don't know.
He was holding his lunch tray with his little baggy thing on.
Well, I don't. It's movie magic, Dan.
Hmm.
But I think a more serious injury, which is carried out rather cavalierly, is when Mr. Busey mouths off at the shooting range later and receives a knife to the hand. And that seems like not only is that an overreaction, but that is also quite possibly not the smoothest way to do that, because... Unless they have really, 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 really good technology for stitching back together the hand parts so that the tendons all work correctly and perfectly for, like, use in combat, then maybe don't do that, because that's sort of sensitive.
Yeah, it's going to be a little tough to pull the trigger on his gun if he has, a giant hole through his hand.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, and as we all... can recognize Mr. Busey makes his entrance when they finally go off to the military academy or school or camp or fort or what was the thing?
It's basic training.
Okay, that's the one. So they go off and
it's a military base.
The area of a parking lot they cordoned off in Van Nuys, they arrive there and they have Clancy Brown as their Arlie Ermey, and he goes all Full Metal Jacket on him, and delivers his little speech thing, and there's some laughing, and it's like, oh, you think that's funny? All the usual stuff, which you can, of course, expect in these sorts of scenes. And there is Diz showing up and being all like, oh, this is totally normal. And Dan... I saw what you just typed in the chat room.
Sorry, I was distracted. So it was when Dizzy shows up, what happens? She fights the drill sergeant and gets her butt kicked. Gets choked out with a knee.
Yes. That is what happens. And then they go through their training, which is very strange training, and they progress really quickly to using live ammunition. They compete for squad leader. Rico gets it. There's a little competition with him and Flores. There's the gratuitous shower scene where they're in their unisex shower environment.
Yeah, like I love that the get to know you scene is just that completely ridiculous over the top. Like, we're all showering together and hashtag butts and stuff.
Well, butts and boobs. And, you know, I don't know. I wish it had been a little more equal opportunities, all I'm saying. And
it starts off almost a little bit more tasteful, or at least I blinked for the first couple shots, where it's all sort of like framed in sort of medium close shots, where it's like, oh, we're gonna be in the shower and we're not gonna show anything. It's like, nope, we're cutting around to wide shots, and it's like, doesn't matter anymore.
Yep. And Dina Meyer has to show things. And which, you know, I'm sure she was like, I'm an up and coming actress, so I'm going to participate in this. But at the same time, it should, you know, it's just been like, it's cool if you don't do that. Like,
well, she does it twice in the movie.
I know. And it's the double standards of Hollywood. And they have that
at least
little
they give
scene.
Him a, at least they give him a butt slapping on the way out when he's all.
He's
annoyed that
I didn't just do this for a girl.
None of your business. Why would you get so nosy, man? Like asking me about like my past and stuff. I don't want to be your friend. I just want to shower next to you.
Yeah, be your squad leader. And so this mountain of frustration wanders off impotently, and he winds up being the squad leader. And they have their First, they have the laser one, which is why he winds up being the squad leader, is because they do the flip 6-3 hole. Which is the ridiculous name of that football move from the beginning. And
yeah, got to have that callback to when they were working on the same team together and they scored the touchdown.
Yeah, well, war is really just like football in every way. And especially the rolling, which every time I see it. And there are three grown men with these laser rifles pointed right at where they are on the other side of this like cargo container thing. And after he talks to Diz, he jumps, shoots, and rolls across to the other side of the cargo container. But in the middle of his roll, he kind of like slows down because obviously he's rolling on the ground. And it's like, why all three of them would have shot him? Like, this is just totally beyond belief. And then, of course, if that wasn't enough, the cherry on the top of this cake is when he runs around the side of the cargo containers, and there's another three guys, and they keep coming in threes, and he's just like, and he just shoots them all, and they just stand there like idiots.
Well, he had two guns at that point, too, so he had both colored lasers.
Yes, well, it means he's twice as effective as three people. And so, doesn't make any sense. But he gets the flag, which is the objective, because that's exactly what it's like when you're fighting bugs who live underground. And so they move on to their simulated... First they have the scene where he sends off the little video message to tell Denise, like, I'm doing my thing and stuff. And there's another butt slapping thing here. And you can tell that they shot this scene multiple times because the butt is already red before it is slapped, which is a nice continuity moment for everyone at home. And there's the mocking and stuff, and then we cut to...
That is really important for the people at home, is to make sure that the butt continuity is there.
Yeah, well, you know, you don't want to be behind on these things. And so the...
Do you think there was an attempt in between takes to, like, make up over the red butt?
No, I don't think anyone cared.
All right, hang on, everyone back to one. Butt makeup, get in here. He's got a handprint on there. Can you get that out of there?
That is the kind of thing these days, though, where I'm sure there's some line item in a budget somewhere where they're like, no, we got to fix this for continuity. All right, send this off to a place and we'll have Lola track on a clean butt.
Well, butt makeup is totally a thing. You do know mm-hmm. that, right?
Yeah, I know, but not so much for the slapping. But so anyway.
They can use it for what they want to use it for.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're really, I just want to move on and you really like popped
a squat. Are you uncomfortable yet?
Yeah. So I'm fine. And then, so we cut away to Denise watching this at work, which is a good place to watch your personal videos, I think, on a large monitor. Although I'm not exactly clear if it's like some sort of like a rental office or something. Like it's very strange because it's just like a bunch of desks with people sitting at them, and but it's not really like a classroom. But anyway, she leaves from there and goes off to the shuttle with her friend, and we get a brief tour of some hallways. And they arrive at the shuttle, and they're those guys like you mentioned, and they go in and they go, "Oh, not her! She's crazy." And indeed,
and then she proceeds to be crazy.
Indeed, she lives up to that because Denise Richards turns out a bit of a daredevil pilot, even though nothing about her acting or the portrayal of her character really leads you to believe that. She just seems sort of ditzy. And so it's not really like, I don't know. There's something about it where it doesn't quite work, where she's like flying in between like these 5-meter clearance stanchions and stuff, and she's like, "Wee!" And she's like, "Okay." I know
she's very relaxed for these crazy moves she's pulling off, flying in and out of like the pipes and then like up through that weird air shaft thing.
Yeah, this is pod racing, I know. But so she goes and flies.
She is a pod person.
They fly over to the Roger Young after like maneuvering through the defense ring. Maybe she knocked something loose and that's why they didn't see the asteroid. But so they go through. they go through and they get on the Roger Young.
In that instance, like the whole like why does the asteroid hit thing, I think they tried to do that by saying like you know, when they just barely got out of the way of the asteroid, it took out all of their comms, so they couldn't call and say like, "Hey, look out, there's an asteroid coming." But that doesn't explain why there was nobody like hanging out near Earth going like, "Hey, here comes an asteroid, we should blow that up."
Yeah, well, that was because they didn't even detect it coming towards them. It's some sort of a weird stealth asteroid.
Stealth asteroid. Maybe with somebody with some political gain to be had if there was an asteroid strike on Earth, kind of like muted the radio for a little while to make sure the asteroid actually did hit so they could sell extra spaceships to the military or something.
This isn't Star Trek VI, Dan. So the...
Was there war profiteering in Star Trek VI?
Moving on. But the thing happens with the stuff, and... They get on the Roger Young, and then she's like, "Okay, I'm going to take us out of the dock." And then it's like, "Okay, here's your pilot instructor." And it's, it's Xander with his ridiculous haircut. It is so poofy
you
in
don't
the front.
Like his haircut?
No.
It's like a combination of like ancient Roman kind of like cut and
that
just
koosh
like...
ball.
Well, it's a very 90s thing as well. Maybe he was going for a look of the time.
Yeah. A style of the time. So.
A hairstyle of the time.
Mm-hmm. So they back out of the port, and she waits till the last minute to disconnect the CG tubes, and then she proceeds to get them within 1 meter clearance of the dock, and she's all like, "Wee!" the look on her face during this is like, this is not appropriate.
Look at me, all your lives are in my hand and I don't care.
Yeah, it's jeez. And so
Denise Richards, sociopath.
Yeah, well, a bit
after
that,
Lieutenant Carmen Ibanez, sociopath.
Yeah, but after that, Xander's all like, "Oh, be careful, you're gonna get me canned because of this, like this is the worst.
Don't exceed port speed because they'll revoke your flight status."
It's like if someone had done any of the things that she did prior to actually this moment in the film, they would be like, "Okay, you're not piloting anything anymore."
Stand
like that wasn't
get
safe.
Get out of that chair and go sit down in the brig because you are done.
Yes. Yes. But instead everybody's like, "Oh, she's a child prodigy or something." Like, "Oh, look at her. She's so precocious." Like
in my simulators, none of my instructors could keep up with me. It's like, "Well, that's nice, but this is not a simulator."
Except for later on when she calculates a better flight path than his flight path and the computer confirms that it's an optimum flight path, in which event I had to ask, why if the computer is capable of figuring out what an optimum flight path is, why doesn't the computer just plot the course?
How long have they had interstellar travel between all of these different planets and they're just now figuring out flight paths and they're having humans do it? Sure, that's
none of this makes any sense. But they leave the thing, and then of course we have the training with live rounds, and they're running around shooting green army men that pop up, which I must say is not really a great way to train people to fire on bugs. I'm not really sure why that's part of the curriculum. Is there a lot of, like, I don't know, uprisings or something that they have to deal with or something? Like, the role of the military in this film seems to only be to take care of the bug threat, and that there have been prior bug threats. So it seems a little strange that they're like, okay, all of a sudden, army men from Toy Story are going to show up, and then you're going to have to fight them.
The army in this movie is, while they know their targets, and that's kind of what they're preparing for, they are wholly unprepared and just full of hubris, because they're just like, we don't need to practice on anything that's like remotely like what the enemy is going to be like, as opposed to maybe something like Edge of Tomorrow, where they've got those robots where they're kind of simulating the motion of the alien thingy bobs. These guys are just like, nah, we're just going to shoot these targets. And when we show up on the planet, I'm sure it'll be fine. Like, there won't be like 1,000 of them or anything. We'll just be like one or two and we'll be able to kill them. It'll be fine.
Yeah. And it's like one shot takes out the green plastic thing and then it crumples away.
I do like, as like throughout the movie, you can see that they get better at shooting and like fewer of them are capable of taking out more bugs at a time. Like in the beginning there's like six of them and it takes them like 3 minutes to kill one bug, and at the end there's, you know, it's like three and they're taking out a whole giant clan of them.
It doesn't make any sense because they don't actually like use their firepower in a more discriminatory way. They just keep spraying every time you see somebody firing a weapon in this movie. They just go down faster. Fortunately, somebody animated the things to fall over sooner. But this scene is notable because what's his face? Can't see.
I think he mean wears his face.
Yeah. and so he can't see, so he takes off his helmet. Riko says, show me or whatever, the helmet thing. And then the other girl's like, oops, I slipped on a banana peel, and then fires and shoots off his head.
She gets shot by one of the green men who has a laser rifle, and I guess that sort of like makes her fall down and like her muscles contract, so she just squeezes the trigger. And shoots Breckenridge in the face a couple times.
Yeah, although I have to ask, he got a lot of flack for not wearing the helmet, like taking the helmet off. But how does the helmet
prevent you from being shot in the face?
I don't. Yeah,
no, it doesn't.
I mean, if it had fallen over enough of his face, maybe. But it didn't seem to be even doing that. I mean, maybe he would just be missing his jaw or something. Like, it was pretty dark.
The helmet probably would have held his skull together as the bullet went into it.
And they just
he would have died. He would have died.
Yeah, but it just makes it doubly worse that he didn't have a helmet on. And so the
good old dumb Johnny Rico yells medic.
Rico, you are relieved of squad command.
Like, sure. What's the medic gonna do? Like, what sort of colorful liquid are they going to soak his head in to make that regrow? I don't think that's how that works.
Oh, well, red comes out of it, so maybe red goes back in. We have a Paul Verhoeven excessive explosion of someone's head. And
like, not even remotely trying to cut away or hide it at all, just like bullets right in the face.
Oh, he doesn't hide anything. And it's one of those weird things about him where it's like, this doesn't show how gruesome and horrible war is. This is just like somebody's head exploded.
Like, yeah, this is not war. This is incompetence. Like, they haven't gotten to the part that actually is reminiscent of actual combat.
Yeah, no, not at all. And even that isn't really. Like, anyway, so they like go watch Saving Private Ryan or something. Like, this is.
Yeah, there's not really much in terms of strategy in the military combat here. It's like they all just land in ships and they kind of get out and like slowly sort of traipse in this kind of arbitrary shape of people forward as best they can until they have to run away. Like, there's no formation, there's no planning. It's just like, hey, let's all walk this direction.
Yeah, I have some major problems with the tactical decisions they make. Sure.
Like the fact that all of the spaceships are really, really close together in the exact same place and just start crashing into each other when they get hit by the glowy butt rockets.
Let's try to stick to the thing, because I want to quickly get through this so that way I can spend 4 hours talking about that battle of Klandatu. So they have the whole thing with Rico. They're like, it's his fault, and they give him the lashes, and Clancy Brown's like, bite down on this, I know that it's bad. And it's like, okay, well, how many people did you accidentally get killed? And maybe that's why he needs to work his way up to private. So they go through the whole thing. And
old school punishment, in spite of it being a modern army, you know, he's got to take his lashes in the public square, which is odd.
Well, violence and citizenry or something. It doesn't make any sense. And so they do that. And then he's like, getting all my stuff and go back home. I was in it for all the wrong reasons. You know, Diz. And Diz is like, you're giving up. And it's like, well.
Yeah, he thinks he's having 5 seconds of self-awareness when he's really just being a dingus again.
Yeah. And Diz correctly points out that he's giving up and that it was a stupid reason to leave. Although, then I started having second thoughts. And I was like, but Diz really kind of wants him to stay because she really wants to, like, have sex with him. So maybe somebody impartial third party should be really weighing in on this.
It's more important than that. She loves him.
Yes.
No, she doesn't.
So anyway, thanks, Dan. So he makes the decision to storm on out of there. And while he's walking out, everybody's like, oh no, come to the news monitor.
we're going to war, which means we're going to go watch TV.
Yeah. Well, what I especially like is that the graphics department was able to put together this package in the span of a couple of minutes. Because, you know, he was just talking to his parents like a moment ago, and it was like, oh, it's getting so dark. Is it rain? And it's like, there's no light. Oh, dear. And so they've got all these graphics, and it's just like things burning, and like the text flies out at you and incinerates, and it's just like, okie dokie. And they're like, the bug meteor was shot out of orbit by bug plasma originating from the bug homeworld of Klandathu. And then it's like, we're going to war. And so the Sky Marshals, yay, war. And it's very strange, because then all of a sudden, we get the scene with him trying to get back in, and Clancy's like, is that your signature? And he's like, no, yes, sir. And he's like, doesn't look like it to me. And he tears it up, and he's back in the army. And it's like, okay.
That's when his voice gets all squeaky, too. He's like, sir, yes, sir. It's like, no, I'm going to tear up your paper. Don't ever make that sound ever again.
His parents just died. Give him a break.
But he's like making tough guy face, like, I'm going to fight now. Everybody I knew was in Buenos Aires, and they died. And it's like, no, don't do that.
Yeah. And So we get the lovely scene here where they go off to war, and the ships are going, and crews are going, and everybody's going, and there's stuff to do. And this ties us back into the beginning of the film where we had the news report. So the full year has elapsed, I think we're about an hour into the film at this point. And coincidentally, we're an hour and a half into talking about the film. But so they arrive on Klandathu, over Klandathu, and it's like, okay, we've got all these spaceships. What should we do? Well, don't carpet bomb the planet. We're going to send out tiny little ships full of fragile people, and they're going to just wander around with machine guns and get slayed.
No biggie.
Yeah.
Also, let's all fly really close together. And what are all these giant things flying at us? That's probably nothing.
Well, the captain mentions that military intelligence says it's supposed to be, you know, light and sparse. Like, it's not supposed to be a big deal. And then she realizes, this really seems like a bit of a clusterfuck. We need to get the F out of here. And so it's a little too late for that, because then things start exploding. And they got to pilot their way out, and there's, like, maneuvering around ships exploding in space. Meanwhile, down on the planet, news crew guy...
Don't forget the
planet.
Fake crash where they're, like, steering their way out, and then, it cuts on, like, them crashing. It's like, oh, did they die? I don't know. We'll have to find out later.
Yeah.
Which they do, again, almost verbatim, later.
Yeah. Oh, no, Rico's dead. No, he's not.
No,
it's not that kind of a movie.
the only person who dies the first time it stays dead is Dizzy.
Oh God! And well, Xander.
I suppose, and I guess the lieutenant, but like the main characters, they don't stay dead when they die.
Yeah, well, I mean, the main characters, it really is just, you know, Denise and Casper, and everybody else is sort of assists them through this film, even does, and everybody else, NPH included, because they're not, they don't really have the same amount of screen time. But it's a good thing.
Yeah, but they're the ones like adding all of the character to the frame. Like Jake Busey being next to Casper Van Dien is the only reason Casper Van Dien is okay to watch.
Yes, I very much agree with this. And so their invasion didn't go well, and they.
Most of them died.
Yeah, and they
leave. 300,000 or whatever it was on the screen there.
I think it was 10,000 deaths. And so they leave and they go back to Ticonderoga. And it's like, okay, so that didn't go well, guys. And Denny's all like, oh no, I need to use one of these giant rear screen projection list things for public viewing in the town square or whatever. And he used that to go find... Rico, oh no, he's dead, but he's not really dead, and he's alive, and he's in the back of the tank.
That scene was also messed up, because, like, they pull into the little port there, and they're walking through, and there's just, like, chaos everywhere with the medics and people missing legs and stuff, and she's just walking through, and she's got, like, a cut over her eye where she hit the console when they kind of, like, ran into something. She's like, oh, I guess we had a hard time too, guys, right? It's like, no, you should get out of there right now.
Yeah, I did like they fired the, first Sky Marshal, Sky Marshal Deans.
Well, he resigned. He didn't get fired.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's be honest. This is, he was forced out. And so,
is there a position higher than Sky Marshal that was able to force him out?
I don't know. Like, I don't, again, how this works, no clue. But anyway, the, and Sky Marshal Meru is promoted, which is very progressive for this military organization. To we got some good strong leadership from her, because she's like, we need to understand the bugs, and so that was a good plan, because before Dean's
Think
plan
before you act
yeah before Dean's plan was, we're just gonna blow up stuff, it'll be fine, and that wasn't a good plan.
They're so far away, why didn't they just blow up the whole planet?
No, but see, this is my problem with the tactics in this movie. Not only do they not blow up the planet now, at that point, they could have just, like I said, they had all those ships. They could have just glassed the thing. The whole surface of the planet. They could have just incinerated every piece of life on the planet. And it's not like it had a tremendous amount of value for them, because it was all just crappy desert. Every single one of these planets infested by the bugs is just a crappy desert somewhere in Southern California. Just blow it up. And so we've got enough Southern California. You can blow up the rest of the stuff. And so they, great. Extraterrestrial life, whatever. Incinerate it. And they don't do that. Instead, every single time they opt.
Yeah, these bugs don't create art or math or what was the other thing Denise came up with? They just live to kill stuff. Like, oh, we're not really sure what they're doing when they're not killing stuff, but presumably they're just hanging out waiting to kill stuff.
I don't know. Maybe they're all just taking turns massaging the brain bug.
With those little pointy claws, that would be difficult.
Yeah, we don't really know how their society works.
It doesn't seem to function. They live underground. We're not sure why. And that's about it.
Yeah. And they kill things, and they don't like people on their planets, and they will destroy humanity if given the opportunity.
Maybe they're kind of like ants, where like they go outside, grab some stuff, bring it back inside to the queen, which would be the brain bug.
And then the brain bug sips it through a straw. Because the only way to understand your enemy is to sip their brain through a straw.
I don't think doing that would keep the integrity of the brain in such a way that you would be able to learn the stuff that was in there.
No, especially not from the blunt force trauma of actually cracking the skull open and then sticking a giant thing through the brain.
Yeah, like 8 inches deep into the skull. Like, I think that might stir some stuff up and like not really work out so well.
Yeah, and so you want to take a sip. So the...
sip the brain matter, don't gulp.
Yeah, pop the top. And so the... that invasion of Clendathu, very questionable. And then when they're like, oh, we're going to start at the outer planets and work our way in. And it's like, okay, except their next plan is, okay, well, the fleet is going to come in and they're going to bomb the planet first. And then we're going to go in and mop up behind them. And it's like, question, why do you need infantry at all to mop up behind them?
Well, they're just hiding in the tunnels.
Yeah, I guess. Do they have bomb shelters for nuclear fallout? Like, just nuke it. and it's not like they don't have nukes, because several times they mention nukes, but they're all like these teeny tiny little things. And they're like, we're going to fire our little nuke bazookas. It's like, oh, okie dokie. Strange plan, guys, because it seems like you're going to have to do this all over the surface of a planet. So it doesn't seem to scale.
No. It scales for a Southern California desert, kind of, but not really anywhere else.
Yeah. And it's not like the bugs are, like, only there. I mean, for every bug you see on the surface, there's thousands hiding underneath the ground.
I heard that. You got to call Orkin to get them all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Raid. So
I think we figured out who would profit from a war with the bugs.
Orkin.
Mm-hmm. I mean, think of all those people back home, like those ridiculous psychotic kids who were stomping on cockroaches for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, see, that was an interesting newsreel. And then also when
everyone's doing their part, even that crazy lady was laughing like she just had a lobotomy.
Yeah. Well, and then they have the that crossfire segment. And it's what's her face who was in The Frighteners 2, along with our guy there, Jake Busey. He was also in The Frighteners. There's two people from The Frighteners in this.
Yeah, that is correct. That is also a movie we have talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. They weren't in Star Trek, but Dina Meyer was. Unfortunately, she was in Star Trek Nemesis, which is a horrible movie, and I don't really recommend you see it. Although, maybe someday I'll watch it with you as punishment, and we can talk about that.
No, I don't know that that's going to happen.
It's so bad.
And which, Michael Ironside, which one was that?
Oh, that was the one with your favorite actor in the whole entire world. Guess.
I got nothing.
He played Bane, Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, yeah, he's good. Tom Hardy.
Yeah, he plays Patrick Stewart's clone.
And oh, right, he's all skinny and white and like wears that weird like leather trench coat thing.
Yeah, iridescent. And so they do their thing, and she's in there, and she has a sort of ridiculous affected accent that she has for being like sort of quasi-British. It's very strange. That was a curious role for her to take on.
Yeah, they're arguing about whether or not it's philosophically possible to have a smart bug.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he's offended by that idea.
Yes.
Because he's stupid.
Yes.
I guess he's on TV, so he's allowed to be stupid. That's where the stupid people go.
Yeah. Well, and of course, the captain, Brenda Strong, was in Star Trek The Next Generation as Rochella in the episode When the Bow Breaks.
What happens when the bow breaks?
I don't really remember.
Does a cradle fall? Yeah.
Are we all done yet?
I'm just trying to get some time.
Are we canceling the show now? In addition to these terrible references I was making about these people who are in this thing, we cut back from that thing. And, of course, their new plan of let's bomb the surface, et cetera, and then we'll send the people to mop up is kind of ridiculous. And they go down and they successfully do this with Michael Ironside's crew. And then they're like, all right, everybody, now it's time for a kegger and a neon green violin. And
an electrified violin with Jake Busey's dead eyes staring at you while he plays.
Yeah. He pulls off creepy pretty well.
He has resting creepy face.
Ugh.
All he has to do is smile and stare at you.
Yeah, those teeth. And then they have the moment of Diz and Rico finally realizing, hey, maybe we can settle for each other. And
no. First he's like, get lost, I don't dance. And then the lieutenant's like, dude, what are you doing? Seriously? And he's like, you know what? You're right. I am in love with her. Well, he's not in love with her because he doesn't say it back to her.
No, but he settles for her. Clearly. He's like, you'll do.
We're all going to die tomorrow.
It's not a chivalrous moment for him, is my point. A horrible, horrible guy, that Rico. And so then Michael Ironside busts in on that and he's like, ah, you guys get 20 minutes, wink, wink. And although he doesn't quite deliver it that way. And then they leave to go off to take care of something where a planet has all the bugs wiped out. But totally doesn't at all.
It was an ambush because the brain bug snuck in. And then apparently another feature of the brain bug straw is his ability to control the humans. before he sucks the brains out. So he makes somebody radio for help, saying, "Don't worry, all the bugs are dead. You should come down here and help us out, though." But it's totally a setup.
Yeah, and then
for what purpose? Like, what was the setup? Just to get a couple more people down there for the brain bug to suck out?
I guess, like, maybe somebody more important, because, you know, the general was hiding in the refrigerator. Maybe they're like, oh no, they don't have a general. She could totally get a general from these guys.
Like, was he hiding in there because he thought the bugs were still out there? Like, he couldn't hear that they had left?
I'm getting the sense that the general might not be very brave. And that maybe
gave you that idea.
Yeah, maybe he was just hiding because he was terrified. So there's you know, his wonderful attitude towards life and everything. That guy. And this, of course, leads us to the part where, of course, it's a trap, and then they're surrounded, and they need to send their craziest pilot. And I hope you can guess who that is at this point in the film. And
land the base. That's crazy. Well, I hope you got a crazy pilot. He delivers not much differently than the way I just said it.
Yes. And then lo and behold, after, like, I don't know, 20 minutes of shooting bugs, the shuttle thing lands and everybody tries to get inside. The general died from the dragonfly thing smashing into him, and a couple people got decapitated from wings and stuff, and Michael Ironside lost his lower legs and everything, and it wasn't pretty, and so he begged to be killed just like he killed the other guy. And, you know, he's really a man of his word, that Michael Ironside. Like, when he said, you know, "I expect any of you to do this for me," he totally meant it, because it happens. And then they leave.
He's a hardened soldier.
Yeah. He doesn't have a whole lot of room in his schedule or life or anything for mushy second thoughts. And so they leave.
Shoot me already.
Yeah, they leave, and then there's the remorse over what has just happened, and then it's like, oh no, I guess I'm in charge of everyone now. And it's like,
that's again, how leadership works, right? The guy above you dies, and then suddenly you, like, through osmosis, inherit all of his knowledge and wisdom.
Yeah, and then there are all those ships there, and it's like, oh, well, that's because we're planning a super invasion now.
and they're all still very close to each other.
Because now we know there's a brain bug down on the planet. We thought there might be, but now we're super sure, because you guys had a trap laid for you. So that means there's a brain bug. So they orchestrate another invasion where they're going to go down and take care of this thing and flush out the bug. Not a tremendously successful plan, because they just sort of wander around places. And
it's around here somewhere. Let's see if there's another trap waiting for us.
Yeah, just look for any, like, dark holes where you can't see anything. Go in those. And meanwhile, Bug Plasma is taking out the ships up above, because they needed to be very close so that the shuttles would drop, and then very slowly hang out there before warping away.
They're very fast plasma butt rockets too. Like, it takes like 5 seconds to get out of the atmosphere.
Yeah, it's a little ridiculous. And they, you know, they're like, okay, well, We're gonna get out of here. We're like a second away from warp. Isn't that amazing? Glad we counted down.
3, 2, oh god, explosion.
Yeah, whole cut. Middle of the ship.
Yeah, it all breaks in half. Yeah. Quick, get to your escape pod. Oh no, the captain falls down and is cut in half by an emergency door, which is ironic.
Well, not just that, but it's called the rescue deck.
Sure.
There is a deck of the ship dedicated to rescues.
They're very large ships.
Yeah. Well, the way things go in this fleet, I guess you do really need to make sure you have a rescue deck.
Also, despite being in space, these ships apparently only go shades of forward and backward. Like, it can't go. All it had to do was go straight up, and it would have avoided colliding into a bunch of stuff. But no. Apparently it has to abide by, like, the same rules as, like, a submarine or something. It can't just go straight up to avoid crashing. It has to steer its way out of it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Shrug. at this point in the movie, shrug. And they have this lovely scene where they get in the escape thingy and they go down and they smash into a cave. And it just so happens to be a very special cave.
Yeah, they crash into to bug. What do they call it? Bug City, Bug Central, whatever.
Yeah. You know, it's definitely not the bug suburbs. That's for sure. And so the arachnids come in, and they're all like,
"I don't know. I don't know." Did you ask them the proximity to their nearest Safeway?
No, but I bet they don't drive 5 minutes to go get frozen waffles. That's for sure.
You know, it's actually a lot further to get to the Costco that where the 72-pack waffles will be purchased.
Oh, so you can't get the real deal.
No, no, you can only get 12 packs at Safeway. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Actually, you might be able to get a 24-pack.
What a rip.
No 72s.
Okay, Dan.
I'm just saying.
Do you know what I bought?
Chia seeds.
Well, specifically.
Gelatinous chia seeds?
Nope.
Oh, you're gluten-free, quote-unquote, waffles?
They're waffles, Dan. They're technically waffles.
They're not really. I don't think they're waffles.
They're waffles.
That box was very uncertain as to whether or not they were waffles.
It says waffles.
It says waffles one time, very small in the bottom left corner.
Okay, Dan.
It says a lot of other words much larger.
It has a giant picture of waffles. Anyway, so the maybe the bugs just need some ancient grains or something. So the bugs corner them, and Xander is like, "I'm going to protect you." And no. And he gets like stabbed through the arm, shoulder area. And the brain bug comes in, and there's the CG brain bug, and then there's the close-up of just the face mask area that it's a puppet that they wheel out every now and then, and you can tell the difference.
And of course, they brought in the slimy mucus truck to slime yes. It all down,
and so much slime, and then it's, you know, it's all between them. It's like, oh, let her go, and it's like that's really not how this works. Any of this. Really, so stupid. I hate Xander so much. Even when he's trying to be selfless, it's just like, just die, Xander. I feel nothing for you. And
he doesn't do much other than give a couple directions to Denise in this movie, does he?
No, and like,
and starts a bar fight.
Yeah, and for all the talk he does of like how great he is and how he somehow made his way to be an instructor when he entered the flight school at the same time that she did.
Yeah, he got in like 2 days before they did. So maybe he was studying to be an instructor, but then his instructor was killed and he was just immediately promoted to instructor.
That seems to be
the way things work in this movie.
Yeah, but there wasn't a war yet, so he must have just died from some sort of horrible accident. Maybe
he fell down some stairs or something.
maybe he choked on a chia seed or something. So the whole thing.
I spent 5 minutes learning from the best instructor in the academy, so that means I am now the best instructor.
Yeah, Xander's Roughnecks. Ooh-ah. So the Xander.
Hey, what was the name
idiot.
Of the ship? The
Roger Young.
Yeah, Xander's Roger Young. It sounds
not
like a
really,
ripoff Bob Evans or something.
Well, I mean, technically the captain was the captain.
Well,
of the ship, not
temporarily.
Him. I mean, when you look at it that way, isn't everyone in this movie temporary?
Very, very temporary.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Diz dies. And it sucks. And that was back on the planet.
Yeah, before they got picked up. She blows up one of the giant fire spraying beetle dudes by throwing a grenade right into its mouth, which is a pretty good throw. But then again, you know, she was the quarterback on the high school indoor Chrome football team, so there's that.
Yeah.
But then she just sort of turns around and is super happy and starts scampering away and forgets to pay attention to the fact that there are still other bugs around that are coming to kill her.
Yeah, and this is unfortunate, and I bring this up now rather than then because I totally forgot about it then. But now it's important because now that Xander has died and had his brain sucked out through a straw, it means that Johnny and Carmen can finally get back together, and then they'll be together forever, and it's just nothing but love.
Well, they don't actually do that, do they?
Well, I think they're kind of back together by the end of the film.
I don't know that they got back together, because they, you know, they made their pact with NPH or whatever, where they all put their fists in a circle or whatever and went like, go team. So, you know, they put their arms around each other and walked off into the sunset at the end there, but I'm not sure they got back together. I think he lost a little bit of respect for Carmen when he gained a little bit of respect for himself. Not a lot, just a little.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Sure. You sure, though? Like, cause I think they got back together. I think they're trying to make it work. Because all the other love interests died, and people have to be in love, Dan. That kind of a movie.
Yes, that's they need to procreate as soon as possible because Lord knows they're going to die and be replaced very soon.
Yeah, and don't you want a bunch of little citizens running around? That's not how that works. So they, whatever. We have the lovely moments with them all like palling around, and NPH shows up, and he's all like, "Ah, he's afraid! Yay!" And it's just like, okay. So you have one scared bug. Congratulations.
It's not even the only brain bug. There's apparently more of them.
Yeah. Well, you can't just have one brain bug. Duh. And so...
The victory scene in this movie is the fact that they're celebrating the fact that they caught a bug that will theoretically help them figure out how the bugs think so that they can then win the war.
Well, not
like,
just
they
that.
They didn't win the war. They didn't really... They barely even won the battle. They just captured a brain bug.
Well, not just that, but then they have all of the stuff with the newsreel is really the celebratory moment, because then we cut away to all of our characters for the where are they now moment. And
most of them are still in the same place.
Yeah. And this is where I was talking about the weird promotional mechanics that go on here, because, you know, Jake Busey is a private.
He just wants to fight, man. That's all he wants to do. He wants to be like Zim. He wants to fight.
Yeah, and Rico's a lieutenant, and Denise Richards is the captain of a starship now. So there's that going for her.
At least until she gets cut in half by an emergency door, and then Amy Smart will become the new captain.
Yeah. And which I thought was also very strange. It's just like, man, Amy Smart must be so ticked off that she's not running
a ship.
She
didn't get to fly earlier because Denise like slid down the banister and got to the ship ahead of her. And now she's her captain. She's got to take orders from her. It's like, God, worst roommate ever.
Yeah. I mean, she's got to be more assertive and take what she wants in the world. But you can't be too assertive in a workplace. So
No. It's got to be equal opportunity military pilots.
Yeah, this is a weird universe, Dan. And
this doesn't feel like a universe to me. This feels like a movie, and that's about it.
Yeah. This is not...
there are two planets in this movie.
Yeah, the world building, not so much. It's interesting and fun to watch.
Totally.
But it's not like... I don't leave this movie and go, oh, I'm really having some deep thoughts about war and society.
No, it's not profound in any way.
No, I mean the best parts are really about the satire of media, which, you know, you can also say about RoboCop 2. Not RoboCop 2, RoboCop TOO. So the RoboCop 2 is terrible. And not Paul Verhoeven, but the thing I'm and that's sort of like the thing that I like is just sort of the ridiculousness of the over the topness of that media stuff. But yeah, like the dark grimness of it all is not really, it doesn't make any sense. And the tactics and the battles and everything doesn't make any sense. And the plot doesn't, not a whole lot of sense. The character motivations, not really a ton of sense again. So, you know, it's just,
it's an entertaining action adventure, but like looking for logic in it is a terrible idea.
No. Any kind of consistency is very not good.
We forgot in that last newsreel, like they show off their new gun, which is just like massive explosion per round. Like they blow up the top of a mountain with one shot. It's like, where were these things when they were invading?
Well, they just made them.
Like, why did they just make them now? Like, what technology did they get from the bugs or something? Or what did they learn from this battle that inspired them to make the other gun?
Well, they learned that their other guns were not good. So that's what they learned.
I'm pretty sure they could have figured that out. Yeah. But they could barely kill a little green plastic pop-up thing with a laser gun.
And they have like robot suit thingy and all that business. Supposedly in the novels, it was all robot suits and stuff. You know, more Edge of Tomorrow-y.
That would have been useful.
Yeah, well, that would cost more money, Dan. And so they spent
$100 million.
Yeah. But, I mean, you see every penny on screen. In the silver paint brush strokes and in the animatronics and the slime. So much money on slime. I wonder if they broke the six figures on slime alone. And the other thing is we got a lot of key visual effects houses working on this. So we had... was it ILM, Tippett, and Sony Pictures Imageworks worked on some of the space stuff, and there was, oh God, what was it? Was it Band from the Ranch? Is that what I'm thinking of?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which was some guy's company, because he's banned from George Lucas's ranch. and so, you know, it's like a rich tapestry of 90s. The effects houses, most of which are not in production on things like this anymore. So
and it all looked great, and it still pretty much holds up today. I mean, it holds up better than pretty much everything else in the movie.
Yeah, go show it to your kids. They'll love it.
Yeah, this is a very kid-friendly movie. What is this movie rated? I don't even know. Oh, of course it's rated R.
Yeah. Oh, we begged my mom to go let us go see this.
Of course you did. It's a space movie.
Yeah, of course.
With aliens and stuff. You remember when movies were rated R?
Yeah.
That was an interesting time in the world.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really do that anymore.
No, certainly not for $100 million movies.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's the other thing. $100 million R-rated movie.
Yeah.
I would be curious to see when the last one of those was made. This is probably one of them.
Well, not really, because what was it? Deadpool, I think, is going to cost about this much, and it's going to be R-rated, supposedly.
Mm.
But it is far less common these days, that's for sure.
Ah, boy. What else is there to say about Starship Troopers?
Lots of people like it, and they're going to be very angry with us because that we mentioned anything that was not super positive about every moment of it.
Look, it's a good, fun movie, and like the ridiculous stupidity of it all is like half the reason it's fun. Like, yeah. You don't expect at any point for Johnny Rico, first of all, his name is Johnny Rico. You don't expect for him to be like the smart guy to like outwit the bad guy. He's the hero pushing the story forward. That's pretty much his role in this thing.
Yeah.
Also, Los Angeles Convention.
Oh, so funny. It's changed so little. That really ties it all up, I guess. We're done. Mm.
Yeah. People should watch it.
I think people have seen it, Dan.
As pointed out in the chat there, they didn't stop by the Quiznos in the convention center. I think back then they might have still had the Quiznos.
I don't think Quiznos existed. Were they around in 97?
Yeah, I'm literally going to search the internet right now.
Oh, good. That's always the best.
This is the segment called Dan Searches the Internet. Quiznos, yeah. Wikipedia page. Let's see here. Founded 1981. Take that.
All right, you showed me. There was a Quiznos off to the side there somewhere in one of those shots.
They should have had that scene where they stopped by and discussed their math grades. The Quiznos.
Over a chicken carbonara sub.
That was the worst thing that they... Oh, I guess technically Quiznos still does exist, but yeah, it's a pretty terrible one.
Their footprint seems to have shrunk quite a bit.
There's still one around here.
Yeah, well, that's... No
one is ever in it. And I heard from the guy who owns the gym, that's where my gym is, next door, that they rent month to month just in case they got to bail on it because they don't make enough money.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you had a conversation with somebody at your gym.
Yeah, the owner, mm-hmm. when I was signing up.
Oh.
Remember when that happened?
Yeah, it seems like it was only yesterday.
Yeah, it was only... Episode 5. Anyway, should we put a space button on this?
Over a year ago. Yeah, sure. Let's button it up.
All right, I love you too, Merlin Man.
Dun 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 dun.